Ever wanted to know what it takes to become a successful trader? Alex shares his journey to becoming a trader and interviews successful traders along the way to help you. You're listening to Be the Trader.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a quick moment to let you know I'm partnered with Cobra Trader. They're a great broker, give great discounts to all my listeners, especially if you're a short seller. Check them out, let them know you heard from the show. Hey guys, I just want to take a moment to share with you some awesome news. I just started a newsletter and you're probably like, what's so awesome about that? Well, it's not your typical newsletter because I'm going to give back to you, the people who subscribe to the newsletter. Number one, you will be getting updates on my YouTube exclusive videos, the podcast episodes, and articles and blogs all about trading. But how is it different? I'm going to give back to you guys. I'm going to select randomly different subscribers who are in the newsletter and give them either the opportunity to have a one-on-one call with me. Maybe I'll give them a free trading book, one of my favorite trading books, just to name one, Trading in the Zone. And also, and not only, because there's many, many more ideas that we're going to be doing and implementing. But another idea is maybe win the Billions box set. This popular show on Showtime, Billions, if you don't know about it, definitely look it up because it should be everyone's favorite show if you're a trader. At least it's one of my favorites. So I want to give back to you guys because you guys mean a lot to me. And I just don't want to only provide content, but I want to say thank you, right? And I provide content by saying thank you, but I also want to say thank you by giving back. So thank you guys, and you guys take care. Welcome back, everybody, to Be the Trader. Today, I have a very special guest, someone who's been on the show before, Nate Michaud from Investors Underground. He's on our previous episode, so make sure to go back and replay that episode if you haven't heard it yet so you can get a more of a feel of where he's coming from, what his background is. But today, we're going to be talking about where he is right now, how things have been going. Then if we have time, we're going to jump into the time frames or time of day when it comes to trading. So, Nate, welcome back to the show, man. I'm glad you're here, man.
Thanks, man. I'm glad we could do it again.
Absolutely. So really, just to pick up what I was just saying, you know, how have things been? You know, it's been a crazy last couple of months. We're in December 20th right now. So just give me a feel of how the market's been for you.
It's been nuts. You know, what's crazy about the change, at least in my trading, is, you know, personally, I feel most confident on the short side. I like to scale into those setups. I'm always prepared for them. I'm always monitoring for them. But I would say the last 2-3 months, I mean, I've really adapted and been getting long so much more with all these SPAC type trades, a lot more swing trades, and something that I just haven't done a lot of. I mean, I've always gone long and short, but, you know, like I said, the majority of my at least confidence in size would be on the short side. So that's completely flipped. It kind of goes to show that as a trader, you need to continually adapt, because I would have missed out on a ton of opportunities over the last couple months. And the thing about the current market is that there's really only one type of seller, and that's a short seller. Nobody else is selling. So, you know, when they stop going down, they go right back up. And it's nice to be on the long side when that's the case.
And so when did you start noticing that yourself? And, you know, what was the trigger for you to be like, you know what, I just need to start longing a lot more? Like, when was happen?
You know not to short, right? So, like, you're looking at these charts, you're looking at this volume, you're looking at all these different situations and setups, and, you know, you're sitting there, you know that you shouldn't short yet, you know you need to wait for it to fail, you know it's likely to squeeze out. So why not get long while you wait for that setup to happen? So that was kind of the first part of it. And then the second part is, you know, all these SPAC type you know, names now, which is basically instead of doing a big IPO like Airbnb or Dash or, you know, some of these other recent ones that we've seen, you basically, it's a vehicle that goes public, they raise a bunch of money, and they essentially spin out or spin in a company. And you know, all of a sudden they're public, and it's almost like the OTC world back in the day when I first started with, let's say, Awesome Penny Stocks and all these like stock promotion type websites where, you know, these stocks go up, they trap shorts, and then they just do this ridiculous breakout. And it's been the pattern on all these different names, KCAC, CIIC, as well as a few other, you know, notable names, is a great example of exactly that. And these things are literally doubling and then doubling again. And one thing that I had tweeted a little while ago was, especially in 2020, you know, everybody wants, you know, oh, why don't you make a call when, you know, before the stock doubles, right? But that's not what kind of market we're in. The stocks that are doubling again and then doubling again. So it's really about joining the momentum, joining the solid news, the breakouts after they consolidate, and they're looking to, you know, take on their next move. If you look back at any stocks, you see a lot of 10 to 20s, 20 to 40s, 40 to 80s, and you know, look at Penn Gaming. You know, Penn Gaming is going insane, and that was one that, you know, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 30, 50, and you know, we all know where they're going. I just can't, you know, get long and stay long. But as long as I can take a little bit of the meat, then I'm good.
You know, what's cool is, you know, you and I talked briefly a couple of days ago just about how you started longing a lot more and swinging as well. So it's interesting because when we talked, you were like, man, I'm just constantly adapting and trying to get better at this more of a swing strategy. And it was inspiring for me to hear, you know, where I'm at in my career where you're constantly still learning. Like, it feels like it's a never ending road for everyone. Like, you're constantly trying to get better. You're constantly learning. So,
yep.
You know, when it comes to swing trading, you started to do that more often, it seems like now. Can you give me an idea of, was it really hard for you to learn? Like, when you say you're learning, what do you mean by that now?
No, you're always learning what setups work and what the current situation is. So, you know, I was doing things over the last week or two, maybe even last month or two, that I would never do before. Why would you ever buy a stock that rips up 50% in that day? Well, in this market, because it's going to go another 50%. But if you go back 6 months, you'd be buying the top. So that's an example of adapting. Also running different scanners throughout the day. I always have a bunch of, you can kind of see it, but I have all kinds of scanners running during the day, which are going to alert me to any quick moves. And if the chart is good and my risk is, let's just say 10 or 20 cents compared to a potential of a couple bucks, you know, in this market, like, why wouldn't you take that? If you take three or four different names and one or two of them hit, the other ones just kind of go sideways in this market. That's been a pretty decent strategy. We joke about it, me and P-Trader in the room, but you know, like the dart strategy. And you know, you could throw a dart right now and make money. And that in itself is not necessarily a strategy. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody, but you know, that is what's making money. So you have to adapt and understand that you know, things are floating up and it doesn't matter what it is. And if it's low float, people like it. If it's a recent IPO that hasn't moved yet. So for example, this past week, we had different IPOs that went literally from 7 to 8 to 15 to $150 per share. So what happens is everybody starts to look at the next kind of recent IPOs that have a thin float. So if you've got your scanners running and you see something start to run up, and you look back and it's only been public for maybe a month, maybe 2 months, it's a relatively thin float and it hasn't really moved yet. Well, guess what? That's what's working right now. And if you can get in there with a proper risk for first reward, you look at the daily support, look at where, you know, where it could potentially go if it breaks, you know, X level, then that's working. So that's kind of another shift or adapt to what's working this week. Will it work next week? Who knows? But you know, you always have to kind of also come back into tune and, you know, was this too easy of a move and is everybody on the same side? Because when it is too easy, when everybody is on the same side, then, you know, it rarely works, or at least when it does, you know, you got to be the first out because, as soon as it turns, it's not coming back. Just like VIRI this past week, which went up, you know, 50, 60% and then right back down 30%.
So speaking about adaptation, like right when you start to notice things just running up, like right now, the dart strategy, jokingly, where you just throw a dart into, you know, at any stock and you buy it and it should go up. With that idea, in terms of
that moment before you realize that, like when you're trading your other way, right? You're trading this way where you're shorting maybe you're a short seller, maybe not you specifically, but you're a short seller. And then it's a two-part question. The first one is, whenever it's you're starting to, how do you prevent yourself from blowing up your own account when things are shifting? And then how do you notice, and how much time do you need to give to notice that this is something significant to start adapting to? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's been like a progressive change over the last 6 months, I would say. One of the last Sunday scans, I was talking about a friend of mine who, you know, has been trading just a particular short strategy that works all the time. Like it's a great strategy, but there's a little bit of a change that's happened lately where, if a stock typically has dilution or something like that, where they would probably sit on it, in this current market, the demand, if the volume's there, the demand is just so far beyond what the supply is that strategy still works, but you have to take a step back and let everybody that has not adapted yet go ahead and short, get squeezed out, and then the strategy works. Just by seeing these things kind of over and over, one example is a lot of times if you start to see pressure, pre-market, it might be a nice unwind into the open. So one change that, I've made, or at least that, I used to be pretty patient with pre-market entries, because a lot of times they, fade off and then they pop up a little bit at the open and then fade off the rest of the day. But now from 7 to 8 a.m., it's literally like a trap. They just are only fading it to convince shorts to stay short. Then they consolidate it under VWAP and then they start to bring it back up, squeeze it, and off open is really 50-50. So whereas I used to be very aggressive off the open, I would say, 9:30, 9:32, reactive type trades off the open, I've been very hands off. I take a 7 to 8 a.m. type trade, then I assume they're going to ramp it back, and then I'm changing to the 9:45, 10 a.m. And that's just by, continually looking, okay, well, I was short this, it was wrong. What are the similarities? So to kind of answer your question, you're starting to see what used to work change a little bit. What is changing? What are the key times? What are, you kind of mentioned time frames and stuff before when you introed me. But, what time frames are, what is the shift in the current time frame that's working? And what worked before is just pushed out, 30, 40 minutes. Let everybody else get on the wrong side. And I would say I've been the most patient I've been all year. A lot of times I'm waiting for post-exhaustion, I call it. So basically what that means to me is, that everybody does their typical short strategy, fail to follow through, starts to unwind. Then it starts to reclaim. People add and add and add. And then all of a sudden it just squeezes everybody out. So then I want to see that blow everybody out, bunch of volume, come back up, fail. At that point, I'm interested. And, if I miss out on 50 cents, I could have shorted into the parabolic, but guess what? It keeps me out of those circuit halts. It keeps me out of all of that crap that happened this past week where stocks are literally going from, like I said, 7 to 10 to 50 to 150. Yeah. Like, it doesn't take many shares to blow yourself up when you're on the wrong side.
Absolutely. And speaking of time frames, since we just jumped on that subject, I'm curious because when I first met you, I knew you as someone who could trade pretty much all day. Like I pretty much saw you as an active trader. And so I'm curious from your perspective, and I guess it could be pertaining to right now in terms of pre-market, where I want to talk about pre-market, open, midday, and close in like the last hour, power hour, and then maybe after hours if we have time. But let's start with pre-market. Right now, as a pre-market, if you're a new trader or if you're just a trader, what do you kind of look at when you're looking at pre-market? What are your thoughts in terms of ideas and philosophies around pre-market right now?
So pre-market is really about taking all the ideas that you prepared for the night before. So, each night I'll do a scan and I might have 15 or 20 watches like that that are of interest, but I'll bring it down to two or four main watches. So I want to see if those main watches are proving me right. And if they are, then they go, they're on the top. And then what else is gapping up pre-market? What else has big range pre-market? And then I start to, you know, figure it out from there. So I'll take the first or the top two movers and then the top two from scan. And I'll start to kind of review, okay, why are they up? Is there anything that I should know about in the filings that could, you know, potentially aid in my short, if that's the case? Or what should I know as far as the float? You know, does it fit the current ticket for, you know, what's moving right now? You know, if it's got 2 million shares of float and it's already at 10 million shares, well, you know, yeah, I'm not going to short that. No thanks. So that's the part of the process early pre-market. And then, you know, thinking about what you need for borrows. A lot of times when things are starting to move, I'll just locate some stock just in case, because by the time there's just so many traders right now, and there's so many big traders. You know, that's what people don't understand, is that this was like 2020 was the year of the trader, and there's no longer these guys with $100,000 accounts. You know, obviously there are, but there's no longer, you know, this a bunch of people with $100,000. They now have 1 million and 5 million and 10 million. There's a lot of like 50 and 100 million type guys now. And so the competition is huge. And if it's a thin float, there's only so many, you know, so much out there to borrow. So anytime things start to ramp, if I think I might trade it, I might go ahead and just take that risk of paying for the borrow, but never end up, you know, using it.
Yeah.
Because by the time I want it, either it's going to be out or it's going to be, you know, probably triple the price because they had to go out to the street and, you know, find more, pay a premium, and therefore, you know, it trickles down to you. So that's another part of the process. Getting a feel, you know, I like to get into a couple of the trades mm-hmm. sometimes and just get a kind of a feel for how it's trading. And whether it's a couple thousand shares or if I actually scale in pre-market, that kind of depends on the trade. But for the most part, if I take a trade pre-market, my goal is to at least size down to minimal by open, because I found that two things. One is it starts to take your bias. I mean, it keeps your bias. So if you're on the short side or if you're on the long side, you try to make whatever side you're on, you try to rationalize why it's right. Mm-hmm. And even if off the open, it's not, you know, you're still like, well, you know, it should, it would do this, it could do this, and it, you know, whatever. Yeah. But here you are, you're wasting all this time off open when this easy A+ setup just went by because you were too proud to take it off pre-market and kind of wait for things to set up. And I think the second part of that is that, you know, just like I said, it just takes your attention, right? So yeah, there's so much going on right now that I think that you need to save all your headspace for the proper setups post open. You don't have to get super involved pre-market. So, you know, I treat that 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., 8:30 a.m. as sort of like a potential trade and mm-hmm. scale out. So let's just say, just to give a number, say I scale from 2 to 10,000 shares, maybe I'd scale down to 1 or 2,000 and hold that into open. But I'm not going to hold the full size into open, even if I'm right, because that morning action, it's too much to have your mind somewhere else and miss, you know, all the other opportunities. So I've made a lot more. I've been a lot less stressed, been more alert by just kind of thinking big picture. Let everybody exhaust out, both on the short side and the long side. And there's so much range right now. If you just pick up the pieces in between, you're still going to do phenomenal. So, yeah, you know, that's pretty much, you know, time frames, 8:30 to 9:30, kind of developing that plan. What are my main watches for, you know, post open, and, you know, go from there.
So, you know, it's interesting. So like pre-market is huge. Like it's so important for you. Like it is, because you have your plan the day before and then you look at the next day and see what's really, you know, going towards your direction for your, per your plan. And then you narrow it down to like the top two or four, depending on the day. And you like to size in slowly pre-market if it's perfect setup for you. And then you like to wind out. And I understand what you mean by winding out before the open, because you can get a strong bias where you're like, oh no, like, or you might not want to take, you might be upset because you didn't take any profits, and then it spikes up and you're like, no, I got to wait. I got
to
wait for this.
And then you try to make that trade work.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, it could be, you could put any number you want, but let's say, you know, you're a smaller trader, you're up $300.
Yep.
Then you have that 300 realized to be able to let a better trade work after the open, or if that's 3,000 or 30,000, whatever it may be,
yep.
You've got that padding after open. And I don't care, you know, who you are, but, you know, just by having that, you do think more clearly. You do think, you know, bigger picture. You're not in a race to get in the name. You're not forcing. You're actually thinking and being patient. And I was stuffed, but, you know, there's been so many mornings because we do that 8:50 a.m. call. There's been so many mornings that, you know, I just say a little bit of hands off, you know, a solid pre-market so far. I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait for things to settle. And there's plenty of day. And that's, you have to understand that there is plenty of day. The more range, the higher it goes, the more range you're going to have on potentially the downside or the upside. So there's no rush right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And something that you mentioned while you were talking about what the open, if you're in a trade already from pre-market, and then you're so focused on something, trying to make it work, you might miss that A-plus setup. That's opportunity cost. Like, talk about, like, some people don't realize how much, like how much money they're leaving on the table by focusing on something that they're forcing to work when they miss on, like, an A-plus setup. Because I'm sure it's happened to you, right, in the past, where you're like...
100%. 100%. And one of the biggest changes that I've made over probably the last quarter, you know, I like to be involved in a lot of names. That's just what fits my personality. And, you know, I want to be in the pulse of the market. I want to be trading and kind of being in a particular name is what gives me the confidence. You know, I'm in it. I get a feel for it. Okay. You know, this happened. I'm scaling in based off of this. You know, if you were not in the name, you're not zoned in. But anytime that I just even have, let's just say 500 shares, it's in front of me, I'm watching it, and I'm zoning in to kind of gain that edge, whether it's, you know, tape, level two, time and sales, all that stuff combined. You're getting the information. You might not realize it, but, you know, it's helping you form that bias. It's you're seeing that stuff to make a proper plan. And what I was doing was I was sizing into a lot of different names. And so the biggest change that I probably made over the last quarter is I've decided that I'm going to size into two names. And that's it, you know, and two at a time. Okay. Because what happens is you start to size in across a bunch of different names. One of them is going to get away from you. And again, it's going to take, you're going to start to focus there and you're going to miss either opportunity on others or the other ones are going to start going away from you. You're going to try to let them work because they are currently working to offset this other one that, you know, is going the wrong way. So, you know, I think that if traders focus on one or two main watches, it's going to be an incredible difference to the bottom line. It goes back to, I think last time we did the interview, if you look at your best trades and what you're best at, if you just did that, that's going to make your year versus trying to nail it every single time, every single day. You know, a lot of people like always scalp and they scalp for, you know, 7 cents back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, that part, yeah, sure. You can make, you know, a little bit. It's not scalable, right? It's you're going to drive yourself insane and you're going to, you know, always limit what your opportunity is. And if you start thinking about big picture coming from a macro standpoint, you can actually use a lot less risk. Let the trade work for you versus you working, you know, for the money. And then, you know, you'll see that there's exponential changes that you can make. And by focusing on those, it's just like, I think you had Phil Godecker at some point. But, you know, he's done a speech at Traders for a Cause. You know, every single one is different, but it always has that one main kind of, it comes back to focus on what you're good at and size into that. And it's going to make your year because, you know, all you need is two of those per month. You know, like say your best trade setup makes you, let's just say 5K, right? Yeah. Whereas you're good at making 300 to 500 consistently every single day. If you just focus on those 5K type setups four times a month, do the math, right? And so I think a lot of people always try to nail everything, always try to figure it out, you know, intraday, and don't take the macro and, you know, do that on a exponential level. If your best setup makes you 50K, 100K, 200K, whatever it is, do that twice a month, you know, wait for that setup and you will be amazed at what it does to your year.
Absolutely. And there's something to be said. First of all, Phil Godecker, he did a speech, you're right, for investors, a trader for a cause. And it was one of my favorite speeches where he eliminated his losses and he exponentially grew his account and his income, yep, per year. Instead of focusing on what can I grow or add to my tool belt, I eliminated from my tool belt, which was awesome to hear. So I'm glad you brought that up. So for everyone who doesn't know that, just check them out. Just type Investors Underground on YouTube and type in Phil Godecker, Traders for a Cause, or something like that, and you'll find, yeah, it right away. But, you know, one thing before we start to wrap this up, because, man, this is just, we just started on pre-market, and we're still here. So it's just, it's
I got time. You do.
Conversation. Yeah, it's just an in-depth conversation, because you said something about the idea of, you know, whenever people want to grab everything, they want a little bit of everything and they want to touch every stock and size in on everything, but that can distract them and limit and make them more stressed, make them not as profitable. But my question is, because there's probably someone out there who's thinking like, but you don't really know which one is really going to be that big winner. Because what if you see five of your setup that usually does well, but you don't know which one is really going to be the big winner, so I have to size in. You know, I got to size in all of them. So, you know, what are your thoughts when you hear that kind of person? Maybe they're asking themselves that question right now.
So you've got a couple of things here. So, you know, there's a lot of potentials, right? So the ones that have the range, the ones that go straight up.
Yep.
Like right now, as we're talking, RDFN. You know, RDFN has been straight up every single day. Green, 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 green. And you know, you could try to find the top every single day and keep on losing, or you wait for the day that it breaks prior support, stays heavy, and maybe that's the day, maybe it's not. But there's going to be a big trade, just like NEO, just like JKS, you know, earlier in this quarter. There's going to be a major trade. It's just a matter of time. So it's about staying familiar. And what I tell people is to put price alerts, right? So each day you could just look at where the support was, put a price alert, look at the support, put a price alert. And then that way, as it comes back down, you're going to be alerted to that. And if it starts to fail at that level, one of the things that I said recently in a video that just stuck with people like crazy was you want dip buyers to become pop sellers, right? So when I short, I want to be competing with the sellers. So the problem with a lot of traders, and you probably being, you know, a little bit on the small cap short side, probably can relate. You know, you're trying to find the top or you're trying to fade it, but people are still buying dips, right? And they're buying dips and it goes up a little bit more, buying dips, go up a little bit more. Meanwhile, it's doing just enough to kind of keep you in there. And so what I want is people to stop buying dips and, you know, something might happen, maybe a pullback and then it retests and it fails.
Yeah.
Now, you know, think about it. If you're on the long side and you're like, okay, maybe I should sell now. And so now all of a sudden, instead of adding, you're trying to find where you should sell and you're going to be cute about it. And you're going to be like, nah, I want a little higher. Oh, it didn't go that high. Now you're going to be competing on the offer and a little bit lower and a little bit lower. I want that to happen for me to scale into the trade. So like you were saying, you know, you don't scale into everything. And I don't just take on size and, you know, YOLO, like, let's go. Like, you know, this, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. That's not what I'm looking to do. I want to continually be convinced that, you know, each level is failing. And each time that it fails, you know, there's more and more competition on the sell side, which to me, you know, obviously there's always market risk, but the more people that are going to be competing on the offers, the less likely things are to, you know, potentially swipe up. Now, granted, if it's a million float stock, that doesn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's RDFN, JKS, these big situations that you've been watching go straight up. I want to scale at each level that, you know, I identified on the way down, on the way up as support. Each time they crack, that to me is, you know, the spots to scale. And then you'll know like, okay, this is the day, it's huge volume and it feels like it's about to unwind.
Yep.
But you have to remember that if you're sized in and your goal is that unwind, when it flushes, you need to be there. You need to be there because one thing that I've learned, you know, over the year of like scaling up is, you know, if you're trading 5, 10, 20,000 shares, it's not a big deal. But if you're trading, you know, 50, 100, 200,000 shares of some of these things, well, guess what? It flushes out. And then you go for that cover, good luck. Like it's paper thin for a buck. So what happens is you go through this, I was just up huge and now it just rebounded 70 cents. And now it's going a little bit more. And it's like, do I cover or am I gonna wait? Let me just wait it out. Let's see what happens. Consolidate next, you know? And so that's the problem with size that you'll realize over time. So anytime that you're anticipating a flush, anticipating it to break down, you want to use that opportunity to adjust your size a little bit, in my opinion.
You know, it's something that if you're listening right now and you need to rewind what he said, is just a simple thing of putting alerts on all key areas of support on a stock that's just keep on running up. Like if you at least, then you can get away from it for a while, trade what you're, you know, what's active. And then when that alerts you, you can come back and then actually nail the big trade. So I love that you said that because that's something that I do. I put alerts on like stocks like JKS or whatever it is that kind of does a shift. And I like that you said that the whole idea of instead of shorting where everyone's still buying dips, but more so shorting when everyone's selling their dip, like whenever they already got in and they're selling on pops, right? Yeah. They're selling on the pops. Like that's such a clear... It's a big difference, but it's a small change in what a short seller thinks, but it's a big difference on how you execute your trade. It's a big difference on like you're kind of waiting for that trend reversal. And if you can wait for that, then you're on the right side of the trade. And I know you're always about front covers, backside, back covers. So it's like you're kind of like reinforcing the idea of like if I'm on the front side, which you're not really doing that much anymore, it's smaller size. When you're on the backside, you're more comfortable, which in this case, a backside would mean selling in the pop. So
and it takes a lot of the emotion away too, you know, on that front side emotion where everybody's like, oh man, like how high can this go? Yeah. And you know, everybody that is maybe a new shorter, they're like, you know, freaking out. It takes that away where that's a lot of risk to you, especially if you have size on the front side. And then just to kind of go back to what you said about price alerts, the two things there is, one, there's so many names that are running, you're going to lose stuff off radar, right? So the good part about, you know, we have like a system and it just is like a huge, like a car horn, like it'll knock you off your chair, like, and, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, no, that's right. I wanted to remember that one, but it's nowhere on your screen. You don't have to use one of your precious real estate, you know, on your screen to monitor it. It's just going to tell you, hey, Nate, it's time. And I think that's the one of the biggest keys there. And then the other thing is just, you know, you end up being, well, one, you get to not forget them. You know, you're already familiar with the stock, the chart. You already had your game plan in your mind, like, okay, if this does this, then, you know, I'm interested. And then you look back in a week and you're like, oh, you know, I was so ready for that. Yeah. So this prevents that. But then again, like I said, it prevents all, you know, you have a 19 stocks, you know, to watch and you know, you're supposed to be focused on these two. So it helps a lot in that. And that's something that I didn't really do until, you know, this year.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I put alerts because I've missed enough plays now where I'm just like, oh man, I've been waiting for that. And then I just keep alerts, even if it's an old alert and it alerts me later, I'll go look at it first and obviously like,
And it's also when people forget about plays, I'm not saying it's easy money, but it's great, less emotion to deal with, less players, less crazy moves. And, you know, you'll see it starting to break down and it's, everybody's focused on whatever's moving that day. So now your competition is like, you know, it's just the bag holders that are left that are like, I should have sold. Okay, how low are we going? And you can join that trend maybe it's not as sized as, you know, a day where it has huge volume, but you can put it on and you literally just have to babysit it on the side while you're trading, you know, your main one on the day. And you'd be surprised how much that adds up.
Yep. Good point there, man. Good point. Well, you know, before we wrap this up, I want you, for those who probably haven't heard you before, didn't listen to the previous episode, let them know real quick where they can find more information about you, Nate.
Investorsunderground.com. We do daily scans, live trading room, pre-market broadcast every single day at 8:50 a.m. just to kind of get a feel for, you know, what I'm looking at, what I'm planning on trading. We focus a lot on process over anything and understanding the why. It's not something where you come on board and you end up trying to chase alerts and follow the leader. Our goal is to actually create traders, not sheep. And if you guys have any questions, if you guys want to get familiar with, you know, some of the stuff that we watch, some of the things that we do, you can always check out the Sunday Scan every Sunday, which comes out around 6-7 p.m. And just kind of gets you ready for the week ahead and, you know, kind of market thoughts. Typically, I do, you know, 10, 15 minutes of, you know, what's working right now, what's not, and, you know, other thoughts about, you know, trading in general and things that have helped me. That's about it.
Well, and one thing to add, if his Sunday Scan, definitely go check it out. I mean, that's 100% free. It's on YouTube and he posts that and you can kind of get a feel of if is this your style or can you kind of give more feel of who Nate is. I think it's very valuable. It gives you an idea of, you know, he's been training for years. And so it kind of gives you a more of a perspective from a more tenured trader or veteran trader. But Nate, I appreciate you telling everybody. I appreciate you being here, my friend. It's always a pleasure. And we'll do this again sometime because we only touched on pre-market.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll do the rest of the day. And then after hours, by the way, like, no, I'm done. You know, I rarely trade after market, just to answer that question real quick, because one, you got earnings reports, which is pretty much a gamble. And then it's 4 p.m. Like, get off the desk. Like, you know, these days you got to be up at like 4 a.m., you know, sometimes. And that's when things are starting to move. And, you know, I'd like to personally sleep in, but my body clock literally 4:12 a.m. every single morning. I'm like, all right, let's go. So that is what it is.
Perfect. Well, you guys take care. I appreciate you being here, Nate.